How many know of a Penelope in your life? How many? Just raise your hand real quick. Thank you. Yeah. How many want to drop kick those Penelopes in your life? Ah, we got more hands on that one. How many are sitting right beside a Penelope right now? I'm just joking. Totally kidding. Uh-oh, that dude, he's got a lot to talk about at the end of the service. I'm Clint Dupin, and we're going to talk about this whole issue with my approval, the addiction to my approval. As we continue our Crave series, because I'll be honest with you, this is one that, just like some of the other ones that we talk about, even like last week, I struggle with. And I would not be here if there wasn't some sort of struggle with my approval or with approval of what others think about me. And so it's a really, this issue can be kind of hidden. It can be something where we can disguise as other things. Because I think when we deal with some of those other deal of approval or of addictions, is some of those can come out. People can see some of those. But this approval deal goes deep within us. It can be this source. It can be this part of our life where it just drives every single thing that we do. And so one of the things I want to talk about is that whole idea. If you were to look at a spectrum of our life is... from when we're born all the way to wherever we are now, it can begin at this young age, can't it? This whole idea with approval is when you're in kindergarten or when you're in school, it's like, who has the best grades? Who got picked on the team first? Who was the captain of the team? Prom king, prom queen, homecoming king, homecoming court, whatever. First, second, third chair. I mean, it's this whole constant cycle of being approved, right? And so think about this. What is the first question we usually ask people, right? When you meet somebody, what's the first question that you ask them? Where do you live? Didn't think of that one. But anyways, really what we do, I said this in first service, what's the first question we ask people? And they say, hey, how are you? And I was like, okay, maybe the second question that we ask people is this, what's your name? And then the second, after that, the third question would be what? What do you do? Exactly. What do you do? So much is based off of that opinion. Okay, so I meet somebody. I just did it in the hallway to here. It's like, where are you from? And I try not, it's so hard not to ask that question. What do you do? We live in a culture where you, your performance, your approval is based off of what you do. Are you successful at what you do? Do you have, where are you at in your career? What is the approval rating of what I do? Because a lot of us, you know, when we meet people and in that interaction, right? If it's like something like, oh, it's not that great, it's like we can basically turn the conversation. And one of the things I said at the first service, maybe some of us, you know, will base that opinion and we'll use that opinion and that will drive us to do the things that we do off of that belief system. So that's what we're going to talk about, those different cycles in our life that really cause us to struggle. So one of the things I want you to see right now is Jack Wilson. And Jack Wilson has been working with families and individuals. He's a psychologist. I've met with him off of some of these issues with addiction. And we got to bring him in this week into our program meeting. We said, hey, talk a little bit about this whole deal with the search for my approval. So watch this.
People pleasing in an area that we talk about in this craving series is really kind of interesting when you look at it from the perspective that all of us are designed to be in relationship. And what happens in a people-pleasing situation is an individual who loses the perspective of how to have a balanced and healthy relationship because they become so concerned that they're going to be rejected, that if they say the wrong thing, do the wrong thing, show up in the wrong place, have on the wrong clothes, that they will no longer be a member of the culture or the society that they want to be. And they have this deep-seated fear of being isolated. Just think for a second about two of the more powerful things that you've heard about in terms of societal expectation. We laugh about hermits. It's because there aren't very many of them, because we are designed to be in relationship. We need to be touched emotionally and physically, or we will not remain healthy. And if you have a fear that you're going to lose those relationships, even though for the people-pleasing individual, it's an irrational fear, but if you have that fear, then you'll do almost anything to be accepted, to be a member, to join in, and you believe that that's the only way you can have worth is if the people around you give you that worth. So you become an individual who's doing constantly for others, or that you're very, very concerned about your appearance or your word choice, and you become what we refer to as a person doing rather than a person being. So what we want to do through this series and in this particular section is make sure that you understand that becoming a people pleaser can become one of the process addictions. And you can work so hard that you're constantly on edge, you're constantly alert to what's going on around you, and you're not able to see the beauty of who you are and what your potential is because you can only see it through the eyes of other people. Now, there'll be other characteristics that you'll see because people tend to think of the people pleaser as the sweet, loving, kind person, you know, who's constantly running errands for other people or who can't stand conflict. Well, about half the people who are people pleasers are like that. But the other half of the people who are people pleasers have anger management problems because they lash out, because they want to control the circumstances and situations around them, because they crave acceptance. So they're going to express their control in an anger and a controlling kind of a way. So what we want to do here is to give you some information that you can use that can either stop it, if this is an issue that you have now, or you'll be able to see some of these tendencies in yourself so that you can be in balanced and harmonious relationships while at the same time having your own personal worth and personal identity.
Jack actually has, he's a mental coach of 5 guys who are on the PGA Tour right now. He's very successful at what he does. And as I was listening to him talk this week, I was thinking about one thing he didn't mention on there was what this can drive us to, this deep seed for this deep-rooted thing that wants to be approved. It can usually lead to things like workaholism. It can be this thing that leads to gambling. It can be this thing that's deep-rooted into even eating addictions, where I so desire for what people think about this that it can lead. It's usually the inner, the whole thing that lies in the heart. It drives us to this deeper root, this deeper thing. And so I come back to you and say this, is that being here physically on this stage is one of the things Dave Wilson and a couple other teaching pastors we were talking about this week is like one of the things we really struggle with is approval. And he was saying like 98% of pastors who go into the profession that I do have some sort of disorder with this whole idea of approval. I'm the other 2%. They all are in that 98%. But I'm fine. You know, I don't need... Did you think that was funny? Did you think it? I need it. But anyways, it's this whole idea, I need your approval. And so I'm up here, and just like Amanda was talking about earlier, is like, we really felt like talking a couple weeks ago. It's like, did we really go there with this eating disorder thing? And so one of the things we've really looked at and really talked about throughout this series, even on a staff level, is like, we really need to go there. And so I really want to be vulnerable with you this morning and talking about this deep, deep issue I have as far as being approved of. And if I'm not careful, if there's not this constant coming back to who Christ is in my life, my creator, it can get out of control. And it leads to 2 or 3 different cycles that we'll talk about this morning. If you want to take notes on the back of your program, you can take notes there. One thing I want to mention really quick is this book, The Search for Significance. And I was just told right before I came back in, is that we sold out of them in our first service. But if you still want them, there's things called bookstores where you can go find them. And I'm just joking. But if you want to get this book, there's a sheet out there. We will order it for you. Unbelievable book. So the majority of the material that I'm sharing with you this morning comes from this book here, The Search for Significance. If you want to take notes real quick, this whole idea of these disorders, the issue with approval is the root of these 5 P's. And we've been talking a little bit about, really, you can go back into like image and different things like that. The root of some of those things is dealing with these 5 things real quick. And I want you to write these down if you have a pen and paper. The first P is possessions. If I own more, people will look up to me. The more I own, there's this desire, the more I own, the more people will look up to me. And some of us get that. That's the way it disguises itself. Well, Clint, I don't really search for approval for people, what they really think about me, but I am caught into this possession thing. If I own more, what will people really think of me? And the second one is this, is performance. If I perform better, people will hopefully like me. One of the things, this is me again, is one of the things I really want to do is share the word in the correct light. And I want to bring illustrations. I want to bring applications. I really want it to apply well. Did I perform well? And this one thing I struggle with is like, one of the things I pray about on Saturday night and on Sunday morning is like, Lord, let this be from your mouth. Because that is constantly coming back. It's nothing to do with Clint. Has nothing to do. But there's this desire, there's this voice, there's this craving inside of me that says, Clint, if you only perform better, people will like you. Third one, physique. This whole idea of image is if I look better, if I'm on this diet, people, my spouse will stop looking at other women. Or she will stop looking at other men. If only I look better, if only I take care of myself. This comes from that deep root of approval. If only, if only, if only. Position. If I can be promoted, then people will respect me. And some of us sacrifice so much to be in a position. Honey, it's only going to be, I just need a few more hours. I'm going to work on this. And if only I get this position, then she will respect me or he will respect me. My coworkers will respect me. The people, my social group will respect me if I can reach this. It's this deep sense of approval. Personality is the last P. If I am funny, if I'm smarter, if I'm wittier or more charming, everyone will like me. I lived under my brother's shadow for many years. My brother was a brain. Like, he was smart. He would get science sets. I would get racetracks for Christmas, right? If he'd get an A-, my parents would sit him down and say, Chad, we need to talk. What's going on in your life? If I would get a C, we would go to Chuck E. Cheese. And I'm like, Chad, dude, don't you see the answer here? Quit studying and we can go to Chuck E. Cheese. Get some C's. But it was all about when I would go to school, that'll take you a little bit. When I would go to school, it would be like, oh, you're Chad's brother. And they would automatically think, oh, yeah, he's going to be smart. My head was large, but that wasn't the case. It's like it was this constant search, like, if only I could be smarter. And I would hear this all the time. It's like, man, you know, Clint really struggles with this. I have ADD out wherever. I mean, it's everywhere, right? It's like, I just couldn't learn like my brother could learn. And it's this constant thing. If only I could be smarter, people would like me. My teachers would put up with me. My mom would stop putting the straitjacket on me. There'd be, I mean, that's a whole different Sunday. But anyways, so we're going to talk out of this whole idea with this book, The Search of Significance. Here's the truth. It robs us from becoming who God intended us to be. So if we live over here on this side of the spectrum, this I'm addicted to approval. I'm addicted to what people think of me. I am so far over here. It's so unhealthy. And then maybe here is the middle of the spectrum where, hey, I have a healthy sense of I know who's the center of my life. God is the center. It's not about my career track. It's not about how I do in sports or social clubs that I hang out in. It's not about that. And then there's this unhealthy sense, too, is where, you know what, I don't care what people think. It doesn't matter what people think. It's all about me, and it doesn't matter about them. But here's the deal. When you really care, here's the truth. When you really care about what people think, you want to make everybody happy, it's a very selfish desire. Because really, it's not about them, it's about you, right? It's like this whole idea, you don't care. I mean, you want to be approved of. You want people to think you look good. You want people to think you perform well. You want to be this, this, and this. Really, it's about you. The deep seed is in here. It's deep. So the first trap we get caught in is the performance trap. This is a pattern of the mind. And here's the equation that basically goes with this. If you want to write this down, is this. Self-worth equals my performance plus people's approval. My self-worth is based off of my performance, how I do in my career, how I do with my family, right? My performance. And then also what people think of me. This is who I build myself up to. This is my platform of what people think of me. And man, I'm doing good. When things are good, I feel great. It starts early. I remember moving from North Carolina to Michigan, and I was a basketball player. I loved basketball. I played on the YMCA teams. I played on the school teams. And then when I moved up to eighth grade, I remembered the tryouts. And I showed up in the tryouts, and I thought, there's nothing to this. I played North Carolina basketball. You guys better move. Heard of Michael Jordan? It's my brother. And so I came out, and I tried out for the basketball team, and I looked at the cuts the first day, and, you know, I wasn't on the cut the first day, and then I remember the third day, last day of tryouts. This is not a good thing, is when you go in, and you're sitting in the locker room, and you see the coach come up to you, and you're sitting on the bench, and I'm already feeling kind of down, because I'm thinking, I don't think I made it. And the coach comes and sits beside me and goes, man, Clint, you're a good basketball player. And you're thinking, well, if I'm a good basketball player, why am I not playing? And his next question was this, what do you think about being team manager? I'm like, team manager? I've never seen one of those be a shooting guard. I didn't know the team. And I knew it was there. I was a basketball player. Everybody knew I was a basketball player. My family, I was a basketball player. I loved basketball. I had the rec specs and everything. I mean, I was a basketball player. And I remember walking out that day of the gym, and my dad was picking me up. And I got in the car with my dad. He said, how did it go? And I didn't want to tell him because I thought he'd be so disappointed in me. And I remember I started to cry. Rec specs got fogged up. And I remember I was talking to him, and I said, I didn't make the team. And he's like, really? And I said, yeah, I didn't make the team. And he said, that's all right. He goes, there's a lot of things that we'll fail at. I was like, that makes me feel a lot better, Dad. I hate those motivational talks from your parents. Like the spanking, right before you got the spanking. I do this because I love you. Then stop beating me. If you really loved me, why are you beating me right now? Another Sunday. So anyways, it's this idea, I mean, in the car. And I remember my dad poured into me. I didn't know what was happening at the time. But what he was saying was, Clint, has nothing to do with how you perform. Clint, you're going to mess up. You're going to fail in these things. But you're still special. Right now, how many of us are doing this with our children? Is we are living, some of us live through our kids. Like we don't make it and we don't do it. And we base their approval. Like whatever their performance is how much we approve of them. Whatever chores they do around the house is the more we love them. How they act and how they obey is, man, you are doing good. I love you. And when they act up, man, you're a disappointment. When things start to come in, and you're just like, man, this is, and what we're telling them, it's basically your self-worth is based on your performance and what people think of you. And some of us still live in this mental cycle, this performance trap. 1 Peter 3 through 4, Peter's talking and he says this, your beauty should not come from outward adornment, such as braided hair, which when you first read that, it's kind of weird, right? So if you have braided hair, Peter's saying you probably won't get into heaven. I'm kidding. So anyways, from outward adornment, such as braided hair. I just thought this was funny when I first read this. I've heard so many people take this verse out of context. And wearing of gold jewelry and fine clothes. Instead, it should be that of your inner self and unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. When I first saw this verse, I mean, I grew up in a Christian fundamental Baptist school. And this verse was taught to us like, you shouldn't do this, and you shouldn't do this, and you shouldn't wear this, and you shouldn't have this. And it was all about do, do, do. What Peter is saying here is like, listen, your outward self, the things that you clothe yourself with, the things that you wear, should not be what you place your value and your worth on. He's saying, go back to the inside. That's what matters. It doesn't matter about the outward stuff. Those things are fine. Those things are good. But if that's what you get your self-worth off of, I know I do. When I braid my hair, I feel so much better about myself. Right? It's like, no, it's not about this outward thing. It's about this inward thing. What's going on? There's a big difference, so listen to this, between self-esteem and self-worth. Self-acceptance and self-respect. Self-esteem, which is feeling good about ourselves, is not enough. We need to have self-acceptance, self-worth, and self-respect, which come from only one source, which is God. Understanding this basic need opens the door to understand what motivates our attitudes and then prompts our actions, which this leads us to our second pattern. Self-esteem, where does it come from? It's how you feel about yourself. Where does that come from? Does it come from others? or does it come from God? And like, Clint, that's easy to say, but I'm in high school. I'm in college. I'm in a job where if I don't look good and I don't perform well, I'm going to get cut. How can I exist in this world and also feel these things about myself? Leads to our next one, the approval addiction. So we have this pattern of the mindset, this mindset thing. If I believe this, like these are the emotional things that are going on, this becomes my action. Really what we believe becomes what we do, right? If we really believe things, those are the things that come out. The approval addiction, this is the pattern of our actions. I must now constantly receive affirmation from others to continually feel good about myself. This addiction, just like any addiction, has to be fed. This is a monster. This is a monster. It has to be fed. Just like with pornography. Just like with being socially accepted in a club, like a social group. It's like, I know I have got to do this. If I talk to this person, that group that I'm a part of, they don't accept that person, so I'm going to reject them. Right? So this whole idea with pornography is like, Clint, I'm not in community yet. I remember last week's message. You know, I didn't take the next step of, you know, I've made it for 4 or 5 days without looking at something that I shouldn't look at. But you can recall images. You can pull up things that, you know, aren't quite as bad because it's a beast that's inside of you. And it's got to be fed. And if it's not fed by who Jesus Christ is, you're going to continually to feed it. And guess what? Slowly, you edge God out. Where you start going, man, I don't feel like doing this anymore. I don't really feel God anymore. Slowly, God gives us up. And this is big. God gives us, I mean, God will work all the time. But slowly, our addictions, he gives us up to those addictions where it's just like, it seems like that's all I can think about. It's this huge monster, this huge desire that I've got to fill. Our teenage daughters, our teenage sons, how are we instilling that new cycle within them? The approval addiction. When people are facing this type of addiction, one of two things happen. You will either go one way or you'll go the other way, right? When you have this action step, when you're saying, you know what, Clint, I'm all about actions. I'm all about, you know, I'm so far into this addiction thing. I'm so unhealthy. One of two things where I'm not doing good. You will do this, and you can write this down. You will either become more driven, right? You'll become more driven because you're like, I'm not meeting people's needs. Everybody is not happy with me. I'm not doing good at work. So I must perform better. I need to become more driven. Some of you know people like this in your life. It could be a spouse. It could be a father. It could be a friend where they are so driven because our culture and our society says, man, he's a hard worker. And that's like, man, hard worker. Man, she is so successful. She is so driven at this. She gets her kids here and she does this and she performs like this and he does this. Well, guess what? We become so driven. We start manipulating relationships. Our spouse, I've watched this in my life, my spouse becomes a nag. This started happening to me a couple years ago, is I was so driven in my ministry. I was so driven to become the best at what I do. She would start to ask me, Michael would start to say, you know, you're gone a lot. You know what? This is what I do. This is what I've been called to do. And we start having excuses. And children start becoming this obstacle. We start putting our little 2 cents, like, hey, I'll read a story or I'll pay attention to you for just a little bit, but I'm successful at this. And I really want to push on men just a little bit here, is this is big for us guys, especially in the world that we live in. Approval through your career is huge. It's really big. So what are we doing? How do we come back? How do we figure out what the center of that looks like and what does it mean? And the second thing is this, what we do is we become withdrawn. If we fail and we're so addicted to people's approval, we either become driven or we become withdrawn because we're so scared if we fail at performing well, we don't know what people will think of us. So we become withdrawn. We've all seen this in every different stage of life. It's the kid who steps up to the plate and, you know, for in the baseball game who just, you know, kind of plays it cool because if he messes up, he wasn't really trying. Or, you know, he's on the soccer field or she's on the soccer field or, you know, because she's so worried about what people will think if she messes up, It's okay because I have an excuse. We become withdrawn. And this is a form of manipulation too, as well. We are scared to take risks. We've all seen this or been a part of this. We'll play something off because we are so afraid of what people will think of our performance. When I was a senior in high school, and I've shared this before, I played soccer. I feel like I was so consumed in sports because I felt like I got my approval through sports. And I remember my senior year of high school, my first semester in high school, we went down and I tried out for a team, Indiana Wesleyan University, and I remember making the team. And so we would begin to get letters from our coach. And the coach would send letters like this. He said, okay, you should be running 2 miles under 3 minutes by now, and you should be doing... Okay, so you should be doing 1,000-yard sprints in this, and so we would train. Well, we started getting letters. I started getting letters that said, if you know anything about soccer, which I didn't know very much, and I started getting letters, and it said, you know, make sure you bring your boots to camp, and we're going to be running through fields. I was like, boots? Why would I bring boots to camp and running through fields? Well, I didn't know boots stood for soccer cleats. And I thought fields were like, I was imagining like Gladiator where he's running through the field and like the weeds are hitting you in the face, you know. I'm thinking that type of field. I'm like, doesn't this guy know it'd be easier to wear cleats on a soccer field? Doesn't he know this? And so I didn't really know, and I didn't have the guts because I was so worried about what people would think of me if I asked the question. So, you know where it's going, don't you? So evening would come. And I would start lacing up my army boots that my dad wore, and they would be up to here, and I would begin, Ron, you like this story, don't you? And I would start to run through fields with army boots on. I'm like, boy, this is really strange. This is really weird. And I showed up, first day of camp, 2 days. And I remember showing up, and I brought boots. And I was wondering, what field are we going to run in? And I had boots on, and everybody else is in their cleats. It was really weird when I tried to put the shin guards. They became like thigh guards, like quad guards. And I looked like I was ready to go on motocross. But anyways, I had my boots on. I'm like, you idiots, you don't have your boots on. And they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, boots. They go, boots mean cleats, Clint. They mean cleats. Yeah, I knew that. I was just joking around. And I was humiliated. Later on throughout the year, my freshman year, I didn't play that much. I sat on the bench a lot. It's a great perspective of the game. And so I'd be sitting on the bench, and I would hear these guys right before they would take a shot yelling the word Abbott. Abbott. And I was like, that must be from Germany, some soccer country, Abbott. And so I'd be on the field, and people would make a pass to a guy who was ready to shoot, and I would go, Abbott! Abbott! And then finally, my friend, Russ, looks at me and he goes, what are you saying? And I said, what do you mean what am I saying? And he goes, you're saying Abbott. I said, yeah, I'm saying Abbott. You know, right when you take a shot, you say Abbott. He goes, Clint, they're saying have it. Have it. Have the shot. I was like, oh. I wish people would have told me this, you know. But I was so worried about their approval. I felt like I was so out of place. I felt like I wanted to be cool. I wanted to say the right things. And so I don't know why I would ever yell the word Abbott. It's not even. I even remember looking it up. I'm like, I can't find the word. There's no word. These people are from somewhere. So anyways, we've all been there. It's like we're so scared of what people might think. Because if we say the wrong thing, we're so living in this area. If we don't wear the right thing, we don't say the right thing, we're so addicted to people's approval. And we have no idea. We're so blinded. We're walking through this world, our society, our culture, and we're so blinded because we don't know what the source of true approval comes from. We don't know. It's hard. If you really want to know how God feels, here's a great exercise, and you can look at 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7. It says this, God is patient, and you just change the word from love to God. God is patient, God is kind, he does not envy, he does not boast, and he is not proud. God is not rude, and he is not self-seeking, is not easily angered, and he keeps no record of wrongs. God does not gloat over my sins, but is glad when truth prevails. God will always protect, always trust, always hope, and always persevere. God never fails. Like, here's our center right here. It's God. When we screw up, he's like, hey, still love you. When truth prevails, when the truth comes out, in some of our careers, in some of our jobs, in some of our social things, it's like we lie. I've done this. My wife has called me on it. She's like, Clint, I just heard you on the phone. Why did you say yes to that? Why did you say you were there? She goes, you weren't. Well, Michael, I don't want to let that person down. Well, is truth prevailing? Because what I'm doing is I'm hurting the one that really loves me and that really, really cares for me, my creator. It doesn't matter what you do. So many of us know and we believe in God, but our actions speak otherwise. It's like, Clint, if just this one more thing in my life, this one position, this one business trait, just this one thing, and then it's going to be over. We're feeding it and feeding it and feeding it. The last pattern I want to talk about is the pattern of consequence. So we've had mindset, action, and now what is the consequence of it? The consequence is this, is usually leads to the blame and the shame game. It's a pattern of consequence. This is what happens when things don't go our way. We blame ourselves. Those addicted to approval from others are very hard on themselves. They don't want to fail. So many times they will blame others because after all, if a lot of our self-esteem is tied up in our performance, then we don't want to admit when we fail in life because then we were admitting that we're basically worthless. It's like it's hard to admit that when we totally screw up because we have this addiction of what people will think. I just come back to my own personal life. We start to blame others, don't we? The way we act in our marriage relationship, right? Or the way we act in our social relationships where we constantly go back in our history. I was with one of my friends last night and I was talking about this. And I was like, I use this excuse all the time. Of when I have a shortcoming, it's so funny. My wife, the more you get to know her, it's so funny. She calls it like it is. There's no gray. It's like, you know, you get slapped in the face, it's over. Like, I agree. And so anyways, I was really having some shortcomings in my marriage where I was like, relationally, there was a relationship in our family, within our family I was really struggling with. And she goes, what is the deal? What is going on? What needs to change? Here's me. She basically should have had a tape recorder because she knew what I was going to say. I'd say, well, you know, my dad was gone a lot in my early stages of life, and my mom didn't. The blame and the shame game. I'm really struggling at work because so-and-so didn't give me the job that I needed, and such-and-such is not working out. If only this would happen in my life. The blame and the shame game, because if it's all about us, right? If it's all about how people perceive us, we don't want to be the failures. We want to blame it on somebody else. And before long, I began to go, you know what? Looking in your past is good, but deal with it and move on. If you know somebody that is constantly seeking that approval, becomes the victim constantly, is constantly looking for that approval, you can disguise it. It's that withdrawn person. It's like they go, you know what, man, no, I didn't really do that good today in my performance. I could come off stage and go, boy, I really didn't hear that one point. You know, I didn't hit that one point very well. And somebody says, oh, no, you did great. You did great. Did I? Thank you. Clint, you're constantly looking for that. They will manipulate the conversation. They will manipulate the relationship. And it's this constant pattern, this cycle back and forth. We go back. It's great to understand our past to move us in the future. But when our past cripples us in our future, it's time to deal with it. It's time to move on. Because what you're doing is you're using this generational dysfunction. It's going to pass to you, and then you're going to pass it on to the next generation. So deal with it. Stop it in this generation. Stop this pattern. Here's what we do when we feel worthless. Our actions, determined by our emotions, determined by our thoughts and our beliefs. Our actions are determined by how we feel about something. So the actions that we played out are determined by our emotions, our feelings. We feel something because of what we think. Or I think that this person is doing this, so I feel that. And what we think is driven from what we believe. This is huge. So if we really believe that God is the source, if we really believe it, I believe in God, Clint. I believe that he loves me. I believe all those things. Kumbaya, let's sing Jesus loves me. Right? I really believe it. But I don't really believe it. I know that. Let me rephrase that. I know that, but I don't really believe that. Because if you watch your lifestyle and watch my lifestyle, there's times where I step back and go, whoa, I don't really believe that is what God really believes about me. So what do? Our actions are determined how we feel about something. I want to end with this. Romans 12:2. How do we break this cycle? How do we break it? Romans 12 says this, do not conform any longer to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. I love that. Don't conform any longer to the patterns of this world. The patterns of this world are what? They want you to believe this. They want you to think this. You are supposed to indulge just one more time, just one more drink. Just believe this about yourself. It's okay. Don't conform any longer to the patterns of this world. I was caught in one this week. Is where a thought went somewhere, and I knew what God really wanted me to do, but I chose to ignore it. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, good, pleasing, and perfect will. What are those thoughts that trigger some emotions? We have to expose those. Let someone close to you help you with this. Here's the deal. It's like, when I say, what are those things that trigger you? In these areas? What are those things that bring that approval thing back up? You need to expose those to somebody who is close to you. And by the way, if any of you have done this, they're not shocked. Like when I go to my wife, I never do that. But anyways, I go to her and I say, I have a real weakness in this area. She doesn't go, oh my goodness. Are you kidding me? They're not shocked. Everybody knows it. Everybody knows you're addicted to people's approval. Everybody knows that you have some sort of thing you're not dealing with. But that first step of exposing it for you is huge. And to start believing in who God is, expose it. Break the pattern of this world. So I want to end with this. Is basically this whole idea. If we could, I've kind of been using business illustrations. You could use a coach illustration for this, whatever. If I were in a corporation and I walked into the CEO's office, the person who's charged, the person who's in charge, and I walk in there and he says, you know what? You really messed up in this area, but I don't care. You're amazing. You know what? You really screwed this up here. You lost us about $10 million. Well, I'd probably be fired, but it was an education. You better not do it again. I love you. I care about you. You are incredible. You're incredible. You know when you do this? That is amazing. Here's your strength. Here's your weakness. It's okay. I still accept you. I still love you. You're incredible. And you're sitting there going, unbelievable. I thought I was coming up here. I thought I was going to get fired. I didn't know what this was going to happen. And the CEO totally believes in me. I turn and I open the door and I walk out and I encounter a coworker who looks at me and says, boy, you failed. I can't even believe you're still working here. You're so screwed up. I encounter another person that says the same thing. But I go, you know what? It doesn't matter what you think, sucka. Because my CEO believes in me. He loves me. He knows where my weaknesses are. He knows that I'm screwed up. He knows that I'm going to fail again. But you know what? I love him. He loves me. And I'm going to do everything that I can to please him, not you. That's God. He cares about you. He is your CEO. He's the only one that matters. It's incredible if we can think about that. That's what we need to dwell on. God's love, his approval. This time in our service is important. We're going to receive our offering. And if you're first time here, you're a guest here, just let this pass. But this is a way, if we really understand and we really believe, listen to this, if we really believe God is who he says he is our center, this is a way to respond. Think of it like that, is giving back. And so for some of you who are new, and I've met several new people here, even in our first service, it's like, man, this is weird. What are people doing? Why is everybody bending down and getting? This is something where us as believers say, God is the center. You're going to hear this song. And it's talking about Christ being the center. It's time to break that chain. It's time to break that pattern and bring Christ back into the mix. He is the center. It is a constant running back to who he is and who he says he is, because we need to believe it. It's a, if you can get this. It's like, Clint, I understand who you say Jesus is, and I believe in God, and I've tried these things, but I can't do it. I don't know how to do it. For me, it's a constant running back. It's a constant, I'm over here, and I know what I'm supposed to be doing. It's this constant every single day. God, I ran away again. You stayed in the same place. Be my center. Be who you say you are. I want to know more of who you are.